Got it. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well. Come on into the State Roofing text line at 98973. We'd love to hear from you. You get a chance to possibly be letter of the day. Lots of stuff going on, plus the know-it-all quiz is going to be happening. And I just got news from Dougie that Lou is over at his house chasing his chickens around. So I'm under a great deal of stress. I can't have Lou kill another chicken. Just saying. Is then what happens, right? They tie the chicken around its loose neck. And
you believe in the concept of freedom so much that you can't imagine chaining up your dog during the show. So
no, it just got out. It's Jacob's fault. Stress
in rural life.
It is. I don't know why this is her walk-on song.
I don't even
know. All right, Jennings. We heard you on all the other stations. I mean, all the other shows. We're like, why don't she's on our show? Let's find out. You've been working hard on the fact that Washington State sent a tremendous amount of money to Nigeria. As we know, that the story was that that we did a great job. Oh, there Lou's back. We did a great job of sending money to places that didn't deserve the money, that were not necessarily unemployed or laid off in the state of Washington. And you have found that the audit has found there's actually more money than they thought had left the state.
It looks to be so. It looks to be about $460 million more dollars than originally thought, than ESD originally reported. It may or may not be that much, but right now the auditor says it looks like it could potentially be that much, and that would be a total of more than $1 billion that went into hands that it shouldn't have gone into last year.
Now, the ESD, the Employment Securities Department, has strenuously objected to the auditor. Why don't you explain what's the heart of the controversy there?
Yeah, and ESD normally, all along, when these audit reports have been released, they've been releasing press releases on the same day saying, oh, we accept this advice. We mm-hmm. love getting feedback from the auditor. We're mm-hmm. working with them, you know, very much in line with what the auditor is saying. This time they came out with a really strongly worded press release, and they called this, quote, deeply flawed and inflated, this $460 million figure. They said that it included tens of thousands of claims that either were completely legitimate or that they had already pulled as possibly suspicious and had stopped paying out. So they said, we've got a handle on this. We're fine. The auditor is inflating this number. And then I followed up with ESD later, and they told me about $200 million worth of claims have already been resolved. So they say that number is far lower.
Yeah. And it's not that it's not that one side is lying and the other side is telling the truth.
From
my understanding of it is that this is the auditor. It was a really interesting comment from a legislator who said, the problem is that we might have hurried the auditor up saying, listen, we want to know before this session's over, we want to know what your results are. And as a result, the auditor didn't get all the information that they could have adjudicated these extra, you know, 300, 400 million claims. They didn't have enough time to do that. So that, in other words, ESD can be right and the auditor can be right, given the what information they have each in their own possession, correct?
Yeah, and it is true that the auditor was trying to finish this up before the session ends in 10 days. So that is absolutely true. That said, Auditor McCarthy told me in our interview that these reports were based fully on the facts in front of them that ESD provided.
What we can report on are the facts that we've been able to verify. We allow entities to give their own point of view, and sometimes they disagree with what we put in our audits.
She also says that ESD will have a chance to update that information.
This is based on the information that we had provided by the ESD and that we were able to verify. And they will have an opportunity to be able to provide the data, and it may lower that number.
So it's not set in stone. I mean, it still could certainly be lowered. Another thing that might have contributed, I will say, is we know there was a little bit of back and forth tension last fall with ESD not necessarily getting the documents to auditor as fast as they wanted. And the auditor even came out with a statement saying that ESD hadn't been entirely cooperative. And we know that one of these audits was supposed to be released around Christmas, and then they were hoping to release it January or February. Now it finally got released this week, so it put them a few months behind schedule. So, you know, maybe some of that back and forth, that upheaval, might have contributed to not having entirely updated numbers. I don't know.
And ESD has had that very controversial leader, Susie Levine, who has, since this kind of debacle, has gone on to bigger and better things, it sounds like, in the Biden administration. Yeah. Did the auditor have anything to say about whether Susie Levine's departure helped in any way, or that she's working better with the the new person in charge, or is that a personality driven issue that's not really relevant to the auditor's work?
She didn't put it in those words or anything, but she did tell me that their relationship is good.
Okay.
We have a working relationship. We're going to continue to audit the ESD because our goal is just to be constructive here and to be able to provide information.
My sense of that was that things have improved in the last few months, and that would correlate with Susie Levine leaving and the new interim commissioner coming in, Cami Feek. And, my sense was that they're having a better relationship now that Levine isn't there.
Okay.
I wonder if not just the numbers, but then somebody looking at, okay, how did it happen and how do we not have it happen again? Because the pieces to the puzzle, you start to look at it, and apparently they knew that they had some problems earlier, that the software that they had put in place was overwhelmed, and that along the way they knew they still continued to have money going out. Will somebody do more of an internal sort of mechanism of what went wrong along the way, not just the fact that $1 billion or 900 million or whatever the amount of money that left, but why did this happen? Was it incompetency of the director? Was it a poor choice of programming that we got from that company there in Colorado? Checks and balances along the way to make sure that part of the government is functioning correctly. I wonder if anybody does any sort of dig into that kind of thing. Do you know, Nicole, or is it you're just working in the number audit side?
No, and I agree. Actually, what I made my headline, which was different from the other news outlets, my headline was about the fact that their security protocols weren't strong enough. To me, the number was kind of the secondary information. The most important piece of information was that they had all of these things they could have done to prevent this, and they weren't doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wonder why.
Well, it's funny because the auditor is coming down legitimately hard on ESD.
They have made a lot of changes since then, which is great on their part, but it's too little too late.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. That, I mean, what even the auditor who has been coming down hard on the ESD has said that one of the things that they have to acknowledge that the auditor does is that they were so overwhelmed. This was so unprecedented. They were so overwhelmed. They were undermanned and unprepared for that it's an extraordinary situation. So she was sympathetic to the plight that ESD found itself under while still being critical.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. Thanks,
yes,
Nicole.
Yes, exactly. And she did give them a long list of recommendations, and they have taken this.
That's great. Okay, well, we appreciate it. And your story is up on my... There we go. Got her on. It's not fair. Nicole's doing all those other shows. Tom, you do the morning show, you do the Gene Ursula, you get on the Tom and Curly, and the Dory show as well. All right, so the good news for us is that the auditor will try to find out where the money went, and hopefully somebody does some digging in to find out. And Susie, as you mentioned, Tom, she is now on to bigger and better things in Washington, D.C. She's able to fail up, as they say. Democrat lawmakers to introduce a bill to expand the Supreme Court to 13 justices. Now, we had heard from Intercept, the story broke that Jerry Nadler out of New York, and I think another congressman out of New York, and then Markey in the Senate, they were going to take this forward. And then we hear that from Nancy Pelosi that she won't bring it up for a vote. But basically, it's court packing, as we have been talking about for a while now. And I know that President Biden was asked about it during the debates. Do you believe in adding more? Do you want to have more judges? He puts together a commission of mostly liberal Democrats with two sort of just token Republicans on board to be able to look in for 180 days whether or not we should put more liberals on the court so we can, rather than 9, we could have 13, which would then allow more sort of activist judges pushing a Democrat or a liberal position as opposed to having what is now conservatives on there. So this is back in the news again, Tom.
Yes. I mean, so there is a bill indeed sponsored by four people, Nadler and in the House and Markey in the Senate are the two highest profile people. And the question is, why are they doing this? Well, clearly the progressives And I think, I mean, the Democratic Party in general, too, is still furious at Mitch McConnell for stopping the Merrick Garland nomination, you know, delaying it for a year, which allowed then Trump to get the replacement instead of President Obama, and then to rush, mm-hmm. by comparison, the Amy Coney Barrett thing, which was even less time before the end of the term, before the presidential election. So right there, Democrats really feel like the Republicans screwed them at least one out of one seat and maybe even two seats. But consistency would say at least one seat. So they're really saying, well, this is ridiculous. The system is broken. We need to get back. And the best way to get back at it is to expand, the number of jurors. Now, historically, that's a flexible number. It's not like nine is set in stone. It has been, in my lifetime I'm aware of, at least. Yes. So, but the argument, I think there is an argument. Let's take the politics out of it just for a second. Jerry Nadler says that there are 13 federal districts, and so 13 jurisdictions, and so that having 13 judges makes some sense. But we all know, and you could actually argue that independent of the politics of it, but everyone knows that this is an effort at the Democrats to try to get back at the Republicans for what they feel like was, you know, shoddy politics. The weird thing is that these guys are making this effort, but Joe Biden is on record, since he's been president, but Joe calling it a boneheaded idea or something like that. And Nancy Pelosi says it's not even going to come to the floor of the House. So it's not even going to, you know, get up for a vote, even if this committee got this bill through.
Commit to bringing that bill to the floor?
No. I support the president's commission to study such a proposal. I don't know that that's a good idea or a bad idea. I think it's an idea that should be considered, and I think the president is taking the right approach to have a commission to study such a thing. It's a big step. It's not out of the question. It has been done before in the history of our country a long time ago, and the growth of our country, the size of our country, the growth of our challenges in terms of the economy, et cetera, might necessitate such a thing. In answer to your question, I have no plans to bring it to the floor. No.
Okay, there you go. Good. All right.
And do you think that
she cuts it down for a little while?
Yeah. You think this commission is going to then provide the cover for the Democrats and Joe Biden to actually try to, as you put it, pack the court? Because I don't think so. I don't think there's anything in this. It's a delaying tactic to kind of keep the progressives on hold. But I don't think that this is a cover, as has been suggested by some people, that, oh, he's just going to use this commission as a cover to end up doing exactly this, because you have to break the filibuster. And right now, there's no indication that Joe Biden is willing to go against the filibuster. And you already have two Democrats on, you know, the record, Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, saying they're not going to be for the filibuster, and no one thinks you can get 60 votes to, move the court up to 13. So I think this is a political stance, a lot of maneuvering, but I don't think, if anyone's concerned about it coming to pass, I don't think that's going to happen.
What happens out of Washington, D.C. is when they decide, well, we're going to examine something, we're going to look into it, like whether it's this or reparations bill. They then take a chunk of money and they say, we'll allow the commission to have X amount of dollars. Like, let's take the reparations thing, which we're supposed to talk about later on. So reparations is going to be looked at. So they're now going to take $12 million. They have all agreed. And the $12 million now will be spread out over various groups that will then take that money and use it up for whatever their causes are. So this same thing is happening here. So what they'll do is they have now allocated a certain amount of money for this group, this commission, to look at whether or not to court pack. Well, they have to write a check. So they're going to write a check for, I don't know how much is, a couple of maybe 20-some million dollars to look into that. Now, that $20 million will now be wasted by various political groups, mostly on the left, will then use that money. It's a way of sort of feathering the nest. So the reparations is the $12 million, for this thing is that, and after 180 days, they come back and say, well, we looked at it. Well, what you did was you took money off of the budget line, gave it to activist groups, they spent it. Same thing will happen with reparations. It won't go forward, but it's just a way of sort of taking some of the taxpayers' monies and doling it out to different special interest groups. So that's okay, what that is, and that's what this is, and that's basically the one way to sort of off-budget move money over. Will they come back and actually try to throw another couple of on the court to get to 13? So that what you could do is you could actually win a presidential election. You could have somebody step down, and then you could bring somebody up and nominate them and try to switch it. Right now, it's conservative leaning as opposed to liberal leaning, rather than just throwing a bunch of liberals on. I think once that happens, the American people might start to really look at it more as a truly political body, as opposed to,
yes,
you know, this branch that's supposed to be separated from all the mess that happens.
Oh, so, and so you would you prefer that? You would prefer it to be a baldly political institution?
No. I don't want it to be political, because we have no other place to go. We don't have any other place to go. We have
that's
the people.
That's the concern of Breyer.
Breyer's, and the same thing with Ginsburg. Ginsburg said, you know, if we start doing that, and if all of a sudden the American people start to see this as just one more political body, well, then what? Then where do you go? Because they're the Supreme Court, you can't take it above anybody else. You wouldn't want to take it to somebody like Nancy Pelosi or Representative Johnson, Hank Johnson, that fool. Any one of these fools that are in Washington, D.C. You know that Hank Johnson's an idiot?
Mitch McConnell was the one who manipulated the political process to get an extra conservative.
And did he manipulate it or did he use it?
Yes.
No, Hank Johnson is on the commission. Yeah. He's also the one that's concerned about Guam flipping over if you do too much infrastructure building on it. He's on the commission to look into whether or not to add more to the court.
The argument
I'm not talking about Mitch McConnell's not on the commission to add more judges to the Supreme Court.
No, but he's the reason for that commission. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, right. Yeah. All right, Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us on this Thursday. This know-it-all quiz day, by the way.
I love it.
All right, here we go. Diving off the high dive here. I am skeptical as Rachel Bell steps into the ring, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino, as she tries to explain NFTs. Using such words as blockchain and Bitcoin. Get ready, everybody. This is artwork that can be sold and
not handled.
Yeah. I'm also going to say the word fungible. I'm going to say that too.
Here we go.
I want to preface this by saying that NFT is quite confusing, and I have interviewed 5 people for this story. You're not going to hear all of their voices, but it was just to help me try to understand this. So I started by speaking with a Seattle artist. Her name is Sam Clover, and she is a digital sculptor. And just let's stop there. I didn't even know what that was before. I was like, so you make with the clay on the internet? And then, so she was struggling to pay her bills as a working artist. And in October, she started selling her art as an NFT. And suddenly she was making $10,000 a piece. So this is the world's newest, most exciting, extremely confusing digital art selling space. It is called NFT.
It stands for non-fungible token.
Non-fungible token. So what artists are doing is they're using these NFTs to upload their digital art onto a blockchain, which is basically just a database. And it permanently cements that they are the original owner of that file. So this could be a meme, a song, a movie, a visual art, anything that's digital, because as we know, you can duplicate something over and over online, but the NFT actually proves that you are the original artist. So then what they're doing is they're putting up these pieces of art for sale as an NFT on a digital marketplace. And then collectors are using digital currency that's called Ethereum, which is similar to Bitcoin, to buy it. So people are making so much money on this. For example, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, he sold his very first tweet as an NFT for almost $3 million. And then the biggest story has been in March. There's this artist known as Beeple. He sold a digital collage for $69 million. And before he sold that, the most money he'd ever made on his art was $100.
If you feel like it's a little hard to understand, you're not alone. I was just like the rest of the world a few weeks ago, frantically Googling what an NFT actually is.
So that's Trevor Hawkins. He's the first filmmaker in the world to release a movie as an NFT. So what he decided to do was split it up into 1,000 shares. And for $1,000 each, you can own a part of his movie. And once there are 501 shareholders, they get to make decisions about the film. So that was kind of a unique thing that he did. So he said, you know, it's really hard to get an indie film distributed. So he decided to risk it. and make his film the first NFT, thinking that that would make it more valuable.
Does this kind of take away the middleman and allow you to do things yourself, your own way, without having to give big chunks of money to a distributor?
100%. This is sort of a new user-generated territory where not a lot of money gets trickled down to the artists at the end of the day. And if artists can take control of their own revenue stream and their own releasing through this whole NFT space, and exactly what you said, just cut out the middleman, then artists can make a lot more money off of their work.
So in a traditional art space, let's say the Mona Lisa was sold. Every time it's sold, the artist, who is not with us anymore, doesn't get any more money. But if you resell an NFT, the artist will get 10% of that sale every single time it is sold in perpetuity. But there is one big downside, and that's that NFTs are environmentally unsustainable. So I spoke with James Koop. He's a UW professor in the Department of Digital Arts, and these are really bad for the environment, which at first confused me because I was like, they're invisible. What are you talking about?
Tokens on the blockchain rely on massive amounts of electricity to encrypt and maintain them. So, you know, people said 10 seconds of maintaining an NFT would be equivalent to, you know, 2 years of electric bills for your house. So it's talking about an incredible amount of environmental impact. And that's something that is certainly dissuading many artists from getting involved with them.
So I'm really curious if NFTs are going to be like Bitcoin, which is something that was just embraced by a small part of the population, or if this is going to become as ubiquitous as Google and something that a lot more people are going to use.
It's such a wacky idea. So you own, what's fascinating to me is that you own the image, but you don't control the dispersal of that image.
Like, no, if that's not true.
Okay, so, based on the cross-current article. Go ahead, explain.
Well, yeah, just to like make it clear. So the artist always is the owner, but when they sell the NFT, the person who buys it owns the NFT. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they can go and like make t-shirts and profit off of it.
Right.
Because they don't own it. They only own that copy of it, the NFT. So it's basically for collectors, because otherwise there's no way to really profit off of it except to resell it for more money.
Yeah, that's what
I thought. There's only one of them. There's only one of them, because if there's multiples, then it would lose the value. So there's one of that image that the guy has.
But that's not true. That image apparently can be everywhere. It's just that at least the guy they cite in the cross-cut article says that it's knowing you're the owner of it. You cannot profit. You can't say, okay, I refuse to allow this to be on the internet. That image can be, you know, put on the internet a million times, but nobody can claim to be the owner or the secondary owner after the artist, I guess. And that seems like such an odd concept to me. That's a value to be claimed. Like if I could put a painting or an image up on my wall or whatever, and somebody else owns that image, that's okay as long as I can put it on my wall. Well, this is like a digital wall, and you can have the image, but you're not the owner, so you don't have cachet apparently.
Yeah, and this whole thing is confusing to me and doesn't really appeal to me. I'm more of a tangible person. I mean, you know, you spend $69 million to buy this piece of art that is on your computer, and you're looking, like, when I look at art online, I don't feel moved at all. It's not an experience like when I go to a museum and I really like something, which is to say, maybe this is like the real art world where the collectors don't necessarily care about art either. They're just doing it as an investment. So it's kind of the same in a way.
Well, I have to say, Rachel, that I have a newfound respect for you, because I was sending Jacob the story. I thought, if she doesn't want to do that thing on the fungal art, hosting a dinner, try matching your dress to your plates. After a year of isolation, entertaining at home is finally possible for some women and are rising to the occasion by matching their outfits to the table setting. I thought, now that might be more of your speed. But look at you.
Wow, that's insulting.
Bitcoin and blockchain. No. Come on. Can any one of us explain a blockchain right now, or Bitcoin and the value of Bitcoin?
Yes, because I'm the technology officer on this show.
Yes,
and I always match my outfit to my blockchain.
She's been doing that for years.
Yeah. Like, what color is your Bitcoin? Because it's probably the same color as my shoes.
Wow. I gotta give you credit. I was like, what is a maha? I talked to a guy on a couple weeks ago about that Bitcoin stuff, and he was explaining to me he's got a big chunk of it. He's holding on to it. And it's worth X amount of dollars. And he said basically what it's going to be able to do is one Bitcoin owner will be able to buy Bitcoin from somebody else and be able to go right around the federal government, not have to pay taxes on it, when you can start using your Bitcoin to buy Tesla or using your Bitcoin to buy a house. And you don't have to worry about the International Monetary Fund or China moving the value of money back and forth. It is set and understood and locked in place, and then you can avoid taxes and a whole bunch of other stuff with it. So
that must apply to this as well, because this is the same thing. There's nobody knows who's in charge of anything. So I guess when you buy and sell this art, then you don't have to have any taxes involved, right?
I think Q's in charge.
What do you pay? Oh, gosh. All right. You know what? I'm going to do the story about dressing for your plates. All right. Thanks,
okay. Rachel Bell. And now I want to talk about taxes.
International Monetary Fund.
401k.
Currency manipulation from China. We'll talk about that tomorrow with Rachel Bell. But right now, Tracy Taylor's going to look at traffic for us. All right, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. They've got 16 locations. They've been around for 51 years. That's a long time. They'll work on your car. They'll fix it right for you every single time. It's Bucky's Auto Service Centers. The men and women wearing rubber gloves long before it was fashionable. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. I don't own a television, but I'm telling you something. I will go out and buy one over the weekend just so I can watch some really horrible television coming to a set near you. The Bidens, the Obamas, and celebrity guests announced coronavirus vaccination television special. And you know it's going to be extra good because Mr.
Roll up your sleeves.
Yeah,
that's what it's called.
How's he call himself? Mr. Jacob, what does he call himself again?
Mr. Unlimited?
Opportunity. Mr. Unlimited. Mr. Opportunity Unlimited. Russell Wilson's going to be hosting this with his wife. And this reads like a series of people that were like fourth on the list because the first three passed on it. Yikes, this list of stars that are all going to be there trying to get you to just roll up your sleeves. And how long is this going to be going on for? I know it's only an hour.
It's 1 hour.
Feel like a month and a half?
One hour. But now, wait a minute. So I think you are unfairly knocking this. To me, I don't know why we need this, but you've got Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal on with Obama. That could be decent. Yeah. You've got Russell and Sierra, you know, hosting the thing. So there's our local ties. We've got your favorite doctor, Anthony Fauci, is going to be on. And then you've got people like Jennifer Hudson. She's good. Lin-Manuel Miranda, Matthew McConaughey, Demi Lovato, Joel McHale, a local boy made good. Sterling F. Brown, the guy from This Is Us. I mean, you know, Eva Longoria, Faith Hill. I mean, there are celebrities. Now, they may not be A-listers. Yeah. They may not be the people at the Oscars, but they still, for an hour show, that seems like enough celebrities. And John,
Billy
not only
Crystal,
this,
Faith
and
Hill.
Billy Crystal.
And Faith Hill. First of all, Tom, these people are not going to be coming. They're not going to be all on stage doing it like a Live Aid thing. This is going to be. I'm sure Fauci will have his mask on because the theater needs to have the mask on. But this is going to be people, what, are they going to be Zooming or something? They're producing this for a television show, and God love them, Russell Wilson and his wife Sierra are hosting the thing. I wrote to Joel. I was going to try to get Joel on the air, and I realized he probably didn't want to come on because I'd just be making fun of him. But Roll Up Your Sleeves is the name of the show. It's going to be happening. Vax Live, a concert to reunite the world. Is that also part of it?
No. In fact, I was going to say, John, this is just going to whet your appetite because in a month, then, there's going to be this worldwide concert, Global Citizens Vax Live business. That's going to air next month. So you just get a little tease this Sunday, and then the full blowout will be in a month. But listen, John, get a load of this. It's going to feature, quote, captivating real life stories and heartwarming surprises. So, how could you pass that up?
Oh, I can't wait.
I am
salivating at the drops, the cuts we're going to have on Monday. I hope it's so bad it's good. That's what some of that television stuff. I used to watch this show on Sundays in Philadelphia called Al Albert Showcase. My mom hated the show. It was on 11:30 Sunday morning, and it was awful. It was all these kids that live in South Philadelphia coming on with these dresses and singing these songs, and it was Al Albert Showcase, and it was awful television. But it was appointment TV for my brother and I, and we used to grab my mom and throw her onto the couch and sit on her and make her watch the show. And then I'm just, huh?
I used to do that with something called Evening Magazine. I don't know if you remember that show.
Ouch. 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 Never run locally produced show in the country. All right. Tracy Till, look at traffic. And then we get a chance to get the know-it-all quiz. And Jacob, I sent you two more questions. Did you get them?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You almost forgot them is what I think happened.
I wrote them down, and then Dougie came over. We're trying to figure out how to move the shed. It's so hard around. By the way, Lou's back, and I hope another dead chicken is not.
I was going to say, are you having chicken for dinner?
I don't know. I wrote Dougie. He hasn't written back. I'm sure he's out there picking up chicken parts, something to tie around her neck. Oh, my God. It doesn't happen when you're doing a live radio show in a studio at Cairo. I'll tell you that. You know?